everybody. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Now, who are Paradigm Shifters? Actually, people that are making a difference, people that are fomenting change in the collective on this planet at this crazy time of our supposed expanded consciousness. And I have a guest today who's written a wonderful book called Waiting for Autumn. My guest is Scott Bloom, who wrote this book, and it's a transformational tale, which is pretty gripping. It's an easy read, but like I said to you yesterday by email, Scott, it's actually very easy and deep all at once, which is a nice combination in this rapidly moving time. So welcome to the show, Scott Bloom.
Thank you so much.
I love the book, and I wanted to know, Waiting for Autumn, I want to know how much of it is a true tale.
Well, the book is sort of a combination of fact and fiction. The metaphysical type experiences, well, first I'll tell it a little bit about the book. The book is essentially my personal spiritual adventure and my awakening onto the path of spirituality.
And it feels like that. When you're reading it, it feels like it's got to be true.
So a lot of the actual events that happen and the more metaphysical type events are all very true, but they happened over the period of the last 20 years or so. And so when writing the book, I essentially used a fictional thread to tie it all together in order to put it into a three-month period in the book form, because I didn't want the book to come off as reading just like a journal entry or like a diary or something.
Okay, so let's talk about what got you started on your spiritual path, and was it truly the death of a fiancé?
Well, actually, yes and no. There was it was around the same period in time, and I don't know if I was completely conscious of how they had tied together at the time, but it was definitely around the same time, about, like I said, about 20 years ago, when I met I'll say a guru, for lack of a better word, that essentially opened my eyes into many extraordinary metaphysical type experiences.
Hmm.
And I would say that this is part of when fact and fiction diverge, is he was able to get me into a lot of these situations, but wasn't able to get me out of them.
Oh my.
And so part of the experiences in the book that I talk about were the negative experiences that actually happened once I was in too deep. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, the guru wasn't able to get me out. And so my own personal spiritual journey, I actually removed myself from all spiritual practices for almost 15 years because I just couldn't handle it anymore.
Hmm. So what are we saying, that you actually started off by doing meditational things that got you into vibrational or energetic trouble?
Yeah, that's sort of a simplified way of saying it. But yeah, that's essentially what happened. And so then I had to essentially make a choice whether to surrender to those type of experiences and leave the physical plane, or in my case, I chose to forego all spiritual practices in order to remain on the earth. And so that was essentially my personal dilemma that I needed to come to grips with.
So you're saying that the challenging energies would have taken your life?
Yes, I needed to. I was in the midst of surrendering to them, and there was some dark energy that was really trying to pull me. At the same time, I was enjoying not being limited by the physical plane and all of the issues associated with living on Earth. And so it was a combination of not being done with Earth and at the same time being wooed by these darker forces.
Well, now that's interesting. That takes us to the book. Well, let's talk about the book, because I don't want to leave that subject.
Yeah, I was sort of skipping ahead a little bit, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it all comes together, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because my show before this, we were talking about influences from the other side of the veil and, you know, what we can learn and how we can master ourselves.
Yes.
You see? So I really think this subject is crucial for all of us.
It's definitely one of the most important decisions I've ever had to make, for sure.
Wow. Well, so the book starts with you kind of doing some jumping around from from Los Angeles to what, Ashland, Yreka, and so on.
Yeah.
Not sure where you're going to live.
Ashland, Oregon, right.
Right. And not sure where you want to stay and live and then deciding you like it there. But in the book, you've lost, or, yeah, our hero has lost his fiance to a car accident when, having warning feelings, you refused to go with her, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And she wouldn't listen to the warning feelings, and you did, and then you lost her, so there's the ensuing guilt and the other feelings. But when I read that, I went, boy, there's so many circumstances that we go through that are like that. If I had gone, you know, get the warning, and then how do I make peace with what happened? Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, part of that is really juggling the concept of destiny versus free choice. And certain things are destined in our lives when we're creating our initial soul contract before we come to this plane. And there are definitely circumstances when you are looking down, you know, a road, and you can see, okay, following my destiny is this way, jumping off of my destiny is that way. And sometimes it's as simple as saying, okay, I want to be rich, I want to you know, get this car, I want to take this job. And other times, when you're getting closer to the more significant life events, and you know, birth and death being some, you know, the two of the most important life events that we have.
Well, they're sure significant.
Yeah, they're sure significant. That when you cheat one or the other, it's very dramatic. And so one of the issues that I was faced with when Cheryl died and I didn't die, that there was the feeling, and I sort of discussed this, that I was supposed to die too, and
right,
that was my destiny. And by not dying when I was supposed to die, it caused all kinds of other problems, because the idea of the pathways that we travel on are, for all intents and purposes, freed up when we die for other people to follow those pathways. And by still being here, I was running into several problems associated with being where I wasn't supposed to be.
Do you think that's true, or do you think that's your interpretation? Or?
I think it's very true.
Okay.
I think that there are certain things that we have the ability for. I think that there are certain things that we have the ability to lead our lives in context of free choice, like, as I was saying, you know, buying a car or choosing a career or even, you know, ignoring our destiny altogether. But when it comes to birth and death, those are two that are pretty important within the, you know, the universal structure. And so by avoiding those two can definitely cause some implications. They can be healed, but they're a little bit more work than some others.
So you're talking about, actually, if you get the message that something dangerous is going to happen and you escape, or as you said, cheat death. I just think of it as changing our destiny. Sometimes I get kind of obstreperous about that. I go, I don't think we should be stuck in our destiny. I think we should be able to change it.
Yes, and we can. However, there are some things that are, I believe that we make an agreement before we're born, and that's what I was saying about the soul contract. And it's not the individual events that really matter. It's more the, what is my place on this planet, and how am I essentially contributing positively to the planet. And it doesn't necessarily matter how specifically these things are done, but are we going to be working with a group of people? Are we going to be a leader in some sort? Are we going to be supportive of a grander vision? Are we going to support Mother Earth? These types of issues, and they're more global issues that I believe are imperative to keep in mind. It doesn't mean you have to follow them, but it's sort of an agreement that we make, and I also subscribe to, you know, the concept of karma and an extension of that, reincarnation, where if you don't actually follow that plan and do what you have agreed to do, you need to write that in some way, whether it's from you coming back or, in the case that I talk about in the book, through passing it on to your children or their children, and really passing it along an ancestral line.
Like a lineage.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, tell me this. Was that part about Cheryl and the car accident, was there a real car accident, or is it just in the story? Did you actually escape death in such a way?
I did escape death in a related situation, and Cheryl was my first girlfriend, and she did die in a car accident. And there was definitely unresolved issues associated with that, because we were each other's first love, and that's, in my experience, very important to resolve those issues, especially when they're unfinished because of death. Did it actually happen exactly the way I wrote it? No, that's what that was what the narrative allowed me to tie the story together by using that. I used disparate elements to tie it together in that particular way, but a lot of the fundamentals are definitely true.
Well, it's a really bad, I mean, that's an amazing nugget for us to cogitate anyway, that whole thing about, well, I escaped death. Now, I've never heard it put that way, that we have these little pathways that if you were supposed to die and you didn't, those pathways are cluttered now. There are other people are wanting to be on them. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that's true.
I have never thought of it that way, so I'm going to have to contemplate that, okay?
Go ahead.
I won't do it live.
I have a few years on you to contemplate that.
Well, I won't do it on live radio, but I'll certainly... I always sit and think about things after, so... All right, well, it's a great story, and I love what you're saying. So tell us more about your concept of destiny and where your hero, you, in this fictionalized true story. It's a very transformational tale. Actually, it'll put people through transformation as they read it. I know that it will.
Yeah, well, one of the things that happens at the very beginning of the book is I do meet my guru in the form of a homeless man outside of the local food co-op.
I love that.
And right after meeting him, he completely blows my mind with a few cardboard signs and conversation that completely turns my reality upside down. So at first, he's essentially trying to open me up to spiritual concepts in general. And once he succeeds in having me look at the world in a new way, then he begins to dive deeper into sort of what we were just talking about, healing some unresolved issues that I had with Cheryl dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that at the beginning of most people's spiritual journey, healing oneself is actually one of the first things that people dive into. And
it does seem to go on and on and on, doesn't it, no matter how far along you get?
Yes, absolutely. And my own personal view of that, though, is although it does have a tendency to go on, I don't believe there's really an end ever. And so once you get a foundation of healing and spirituality, I always encourage people to then start looking out and seeing if they can heal people outside of themselves.
That's a great
idea. Because it's really an energy exchange that happens when you begin to work with other people. And who actually gets healed, whether it's you or that other person, who knows? It could be you, it could be them. But just working with others is, I think, really important.
And do you do healing work?
Yes, constantly.
Okay.
That's actually a lot of what's in the book. And one of the most powerful healing modalities for myself that's helped me a lot, and it was also the first major one that's in the book, is shamanic soul retrieval.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I view that of us go through difficult situations throughout our lives. And when we come to a difficult situation, if it's extremely difficult, we oftentimes try to deaden that piece of ourselves so we don't feel it anymore. So in the same way that one might go into shock in physical trauma, if you go into emotional or your soul has trauma as well, like let's say, early childhood trauma or a loved one dies or something like that, we have a tendency to want to just deaden that and to numb ourselves so we don't feel it anymore. And in today's society, we often believe that if we don't think about it anymore and we don't feel the pain anymore, then we're over it. And it's actually exactly opposite of that. So the Native American view is when those difficult things happen, those traumatic events, we actually lose a piece of our soul and we leave it in that place and time. And as we get older through the years, we start, we continue to have more and more difficult situations and we continue to give pieces of our soul away. That by the time that we're, 30, 40, 50 years old, there's very little of our original soul that is left or usable because so much of it has been left behind. And in my opinion, that's a lot of the reason why people have a tendency in today's day and age to really live from their intellect and really think about things too much as opposed to feel, because there isn't much of their soul left to feel with. And so shamanic soul retrieval is a technique that is used where a shaman usually guides a person to what's termed as journeying back to the place where they originally left that soul, sort of transmitting them, their souls, back to that place and time, retrieving that soul, and then integrating it back in with their soul in today's day and age. And the advantage of doing that is not only does that give us more of ourselves to feel from and to live more completely, but it also comes with it the wisdom that is imparted by having that difficult event. I look at these difficult events as very much positive gifts from the universe, where it really allows you to learn some incredible wisdom that you can bring with to your life, and more important, as I was saying earlier, to then share that wisdom with others.
That makes sense. I was just thinking about how when somebody is abused, really, they can very often be very emotionally immature, right? Until they recover. So I was just thinking that's a way to explain the very thing you're talking about. I'm going, oh yeah, okay, because the person loses his ability to move forward.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Normally, yeah.
Right, because not only do they not not have that piece of themselves anymore that's directly affected, but the wisdom that's inherent with that that knowledge and subsequent wisdom is left as well. So you are definitely a lot more immature when it comes to those types of situations.
So we could live longer maybe and kind of get young as we're old, eh?
Absolutely.
So you do a lot. Do you do a lot of soul retrieval?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of soul retrieval. I'm at the point now where I think I have a lot of it, most of it back. But definitely the years leading up to the book and the book itself, the writing of the book itself, really retrieved an awful lot of myself. There were some parts of the book that, especially what I was talking about at the beginning of the conversation with, being in sort of metaphysical experiences that I wasn't able to get out of. I wasn't able to discuss them and even speak to them with my wife the entire time I knew her, and it wasn't until I began writing the book where I was able to put those experiences into words, and then
they could actually share them.
Yeah, I could actually share them, and then more, initially share them with myself, which was, an incredible experience.
Well, you know, you said something, and this is my, I don't want to jump around too much, but in any case, the part of the book which brings the darker forces in, there's something that you just said a while back and something I read in the book as well that says, so many times those of us who are into metaphysics in a big way will not look at evil or will not look at the dark forces, and that can leave us extremely, well, I'll let you say it, but it leaves us more vulnerable.
Yes, absolutely. And I would say that the spirituality movement, which is definitely what I would be consider myself part of, as opposed to the more religious movement, has gone so far the other way and saying, okay, well, hell doesn't exist. There is no such thing as evil. There is, you know, it's all within us. It's just, you know, what we're feeling at that moment and that sort of thing. And it just, you know, love heals all, et cetera. A lot of those things are coming from the right place, and I believe in some of them. But I think that by oversimplifying that and basically saying, okay, evil doesn't exist at all,
mm-hmm.
is a really big mistake.
It's like shutting down a part of our awareness, too, isn't it?
Like, yeah, it's really trying. It's like a forced naivete of saying, okay, well, if I don't believe it exists, then I don't have to protect myself, and then which is fine for a lot of earth-based spiritual practices, which I think most people in the past have been involved in, but with what's going on right now, there's a movement where people are really deepening their spiritual practices and not necessarily limiting everything that they're doing to the earthly plane. And once you start opening yourself up to other planes, you do need to be very cognizant of protection. That's a really important part of moving to the next level.
And I remember reading in this book that most spiritual masters, great masters, spend a lot of time grappling with the darker side.
Yeah, I don't know if it has to be most of the time, but I would say, you know, from my experience, it's something that you definitely have to go through, and it's a choice. If you continue to, to court it, then it's going to be as present as you let it. But by completely ignoring it and just saying, okay, it's only good, and there's nothing to worry about, is going to before too long, you're going to be faced with a situation that you might not be able to get out of. And I'm hoping, in retrospect, after writing the book, I found that that's probably the most important message of the entire book when it comes to people that are really indulging in the deeper metaphysical type experiences, is to really just be aware that this is something you should look out for.
Okay. And so let's get back to Robert, who was a homeless fellow, wasn't he?
Yes.
And he was wonderful, and I love the way he, as a character, what did he say? He was a walk-in, eh?
Yes, he was a walk-in. The book, Waiting for Autumn, is, as I mentioned at the beginning, my personal spiritual awakening. In January, I actually released the prequel to the book as an ebook download called Summer's Path.
It's called Summer's Path, P-A-S-S?
P-A-T-H.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Summer's Path. And in Summer's Path, it's essentially Robert and Dawn's journey up to the point when they meet me.
Dawn is the dog.
Yeah, Dawn is the dog. and so they meet in Eugene, Oregon. And so it's the 3 months before they meet me, ending with actually meeting me from Robert's perspective as opposed to from my perspective, which is in Waiting for Autumn. And so whenever anybody buys the book Waiting for Autumn, they can actually download Summer's Path for free by going to my website.
How wonderful.
Yeah. And so if you decide to order it online, it gives you something to read before the book arrives.
and online is you just look up, what's the website?
It's scottblum, scottblum.net.
Okay. Well, I really recommend this book, and so I imagine that section is wonderful, too.
and so all of the walk-in situation that you're talking about is all explained and explored in depth in Summer's Path.
Okay. Well, the whole concept of walk-ins is pretty interesting anyway, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. This, again, I keep on going back to a soul contract, but it's really common. Basically, for the people that don't know what a walk-in is it's when two souls make an agreement, usually, not always, but usually before they're born into the physical world, where they say, okay, after you're done with your body, before the body goes away, then the other soul will sort of take it over for just a short amount of time and then use it for a little while. So oftentimes it's towards the end of one's life where the second soul doesn't want to go through all of the time and effort that it takes to nurture a new body, like learning how to talk and walk, etc., and just come in to do some specific things, you know, in a particular point of time. And so that arrangement is made. It's not like possession or anything that's, you know, bad. It's actually a positive thing that one person is ready to leave, and so the other person just uses the body just for a little point in time to just do some certain things.
How can you tell who's a walk-in?
I'm sorry, what?
How can you tell who is a walk-in?
Well, there's different ways. I mean, like, if you're worried, if you're, like, a loved one, it might be, is being controlled by a walk-in or not. There might be some traits that personality traits that don't seem to be right anymore, that they don't remember certain things, that just certain things aren't, you know, they just don't seem right. A lot of people, I think, confuse, you know, Alzheimer's or some of those later type dementia issues with walk-ins. It just depends on, you know, of course, the individual. But you know,
and do they come in and take up the whole memory and so on?
Yes, they usually take over. Sometimes the other soul is there also, but
mm-hmm.
most of the time they're not. Mm-hmm. So most of the time it's there, but a lot of the memories are there. But there's going to be you know, personality traits that are going to be kind of quirky. So as far as, like, you know, human, is that what you're saying, like detecting loved ones?
Yeah, I think it's just an interesting subject that some people can tell that this is not my person, whoever, this is not my husband, this is not my
wife.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when I was saying at the beginning of really that a lot of people that ignore difficult situations and leave a piece of their soul deadened along the way, that they began living more from their intellect and mentally. As we integrate ourselves more and really develop spiritually, what we're going to be trying to do and succeeding as we go along by just practicing that is really living from our heart center and feeling. You know, having a communication that is more energetic as opposed to intellectual. When that starts happening, there's going to be, you know, a soul connection that, especially with loved ones, we probably already have, and we already kind of feel it. We just haven't really put words to it yet.
Put our awareness there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Put our awareness, exactly. And so once your awareness is there, then you're going to have that connection that's being broken. And in the same way that you feel that your connection has kind of moved on to another plane when somebody dies, if you've experienced that you might have a similar feeling when a walk-in comes in and your loved one has moved on. So, I mean, that's the real reason, that's the real way of detecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started with more the intellectual and the mental way of realizing it. But the only real way you're going to be able to know for sure is if you are living from that part of you, and then can feel if that connection has moved on or not.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that. What do you think is going on the planet? And then I want to go back to Robert and Dawn. What do you think is going on the planet? Do you think we're emerging as a species that's actually interacting energetically and consciously? Do you think that's the emergence that's happening?
Yeah, I do believe that. I think that's happening a lot. And just the fact that people have a tendency to be open to this book, and I was open to writing it at this point in time, I think is an example and a testament to what's going on. I'm actually surprised at how much sort of spiritual communication and spiritual dialogue is going on and has been for the last I don't know, but I'd say about 5 years now. I've been very aware of it.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, actually.
Yeah,
and what I love is it's out on the internet all over the world. It's just going a million miles an hour. I know there's other stuff on the internet that's negative, but we're keeping it up here.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think, and I kind of think that that's what the whole 2012 thing is all about. I look at this as essentially a quickening of all of these things happening and really moving collectively to the next level of consciousness. And for me, 2012 is really arbitrary. I look at that as this is already here. That's what's been going on.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that the embodiment of the soul's journey is becoming a part of our authentication process. So when you talk about getting, you know, soul retrievals and so on, I think the more of our real self we're bringing together consciously, I think that that's more and more acceptable and more recognizable as an empowerment. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a person that I've worked with named Judith Blackstone, and she does this work called an embodiment work, where it's essentially integrating your soul with your physical being. And it's I also explore that a bit in Summer's Path, and I find that to be, you know, one of the imperative first steps that we have, because it's so easy to really be conscious of one or the other, but at this point, trying to integrate our spirit with our physical experience and try to make this experience, this plane that we're on right now, a spiritual place is, I think, something that we're all charted to do at this point.
Well, and back to the book, I noticed when you had some awakenings with Robert at the beginning, and you go through this, I guess, soul retrieval, right?
Yes.
Then you go into the situation where they do a constellation of bringing through the acting out of the various characters.
Yes, absolutely. Well, basically what the constellation is, one of the other most important things that I alluded to earlier was the concept that many of the situations that affect us and the issues that we have to deal with in our lives are above and beyond what we have done to ourselves or within our own lives or our parents have done to us. Many of the things that we have to deal with are really ancestral in nature. Mm-hmm. And so they, as I was mentioning before, that those are, that if you do not address these issues and you leave a piece of your soul deadened at the end of your life, if you're successful at avoiding these situations through the end of your life, it doesn't mean it goes away, but these issues are actually passed down generation after generation to your children and their children, etc., until somebody can actually deal with those situations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the process of fixing those issues, you know, collectively, that is called ancestral healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the most powerful methodologies that I've experienced in doing ancestral healing are constellations. And constellations were originally created by a German psychiatrist named Bert Hellinger. Essentially what they are...
Isn't the same person who created... Isn't there... Oh, no, I was thinking of Heller. Heller. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a different person.
Yeah. I'm writing this down.
And so, basically what a constellation is, the short description is, it's essentially spiritual theater,
mm-hmm.
where you have a group of people that come together. And let's say that you have a constellation that's going to be done for you about a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you do is pick different people within that group to represent different people.
Your parents and your
So usually you start with yourself. So you have a representative of yourself. And let's, you know, oftentimes if you have a partner, then you would bring a representative for your partner. Maybe you believe that it has to do with your parents, so you bring those in. Maybe it has to do with, like in the case of, you know, Cheryl, the drunk driver that ran into her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these different people that you find are very important. Then the facilitator will then bring in other people that they will be getting insight on who might also be affected, and some of the hidden entanglements that they're called, that you might be that you might have two different people in your family line, or people, other people's family lines that are related to that event. So they might bring in your grandfather, your great-grandfather, and oftentimes the people that they're bringing in are actually no longer alive. Then once the constellation begins, everybody that's a representative in the circle then effectively channels the spirit of these different people that they're representing. And although there's not a lot of talk, there's, you know, the facilitator essentially interviews different people within the group, a lot of what happens is just sort of a physical gravitation between different people or away from different people. And just sitting and watching it is probably one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had, and I highly recommend it.
That's very exciting. So what it does is it moves the locked-in ancestral, what drives and programs, and you feel the energy shift. You feel a huge energy shift in the middle of it?
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely feel energy shifts. A lot of what goes on in this type of work is much of what we are avoiding simply needs to be acknowledged and honored. And so, by
and in the acknowledgement, there's a clearing, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a clearing because there's stuck energy, and
mm-hmm.
so by acknowledging and honoring what has come before, it also allows you to put yourself in a particular place that's in line with where you should be, in line with everybody else. So, and energetically, if you are in your own place, and all of the events are in the, and all of the people that represent and have these events are in their own place, then the energy begins to move again, and it's and that's where the healing is done. And a lot of people, like for example, let's say there's a constellation about, you know, two estranged sisters that haven't talked in years. There's lots and lots of cases where this ancestral healing work is done, and once it's these constellations are complete, these people that have never talked before, let's say the sister that didn't even know that this was going on, will out of the blue within, you know, a week or so call the person and resolve issues.
Hmm.
So it works on an energetic level where we're all tied together, and it's not just a psychological thing that's only for the benefit of the person in the circle, but it really connects everybody that happens to be physically there at the healing, as well as people that are, you know, throughout the world, and more importantly, people that have moved on and aren't on this earth anymore.
Mm. So you started off with the soul retrieval and then moved to the constellation to make it more thorough? Or can you do all the soul retrieval with the constellations or what?
Well, it's kind of a different thing, because the soul retrieval is really for your own benefit,
mm-hmm.
and constellation really starts working on the entanglements with other people.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I would say that there are really two different steps.
So he gets through the constellation part, which I found also fascinating, and then he gets to the challenge by the darker, right?
Yeah, well, once he was able to really come to terms with his own healing, then he began to open up to his own soul's purpose. And how is he going to live this more spiritual life for the benefit of, you know, the entire universe, as opposed to just solving, you know, his issues? Once you solve them, as I was saying before, you know, you can continue to look inward and forever. But really being able to acknowledge, okay, you know, I'm actually well enough now that I can start helping others. And once he began to look outside of himself, you know, I start looking at the I start really coming to terms with my own intuition and following what I am starting to, the information the universe is giving to me directly, as opposed to through Robert.
Mm-hmm.
At that point is when I start getting exposed to other darker forces because I find myself in these situations that I'm not necessarily prepared for.
And it's interesting because it comes through dreams at first, right, where you get directed to seek.
Yeah, for me, I look at the world primarily in three different ways, three different places, which is the earth plane and then the spirit plane, and then in between is sort of like dreamland. And what dreamland gives you the ability to do is to get into some of the experiences of the spirit world without a lot of the inherent dangers. I kind of liken it to those airplanes that the astronauts go on in order to get familiar with being weightless. You know, they're still, you know, in this atmosphere, but they get an idea of what it's like without necessarily being in space. So that's what I look at dreamland for. Mm. And there's also communication between other people. It's kind of like a safe zone of communication between other people that either might be alive or not alive in this plane, and then us in this world.
So let me jump back to what would you recommend those of us in the spiritual mode do in order to know that there's darkness, to know that there's a polarity. I mean, to me, I'm pretty conscious of a polarity going on, or quite a strong polarization
mm-hmm.
as we shift and evolve, you know. What do you recommend that people do in order to be strong in the face of what we called evil in the book?
Well, the most important thing that helps me in my life almost in anything I do, whether it's positive in you know, in business, in my personal life, as well as in the spirit plane and some of the more advanced metaphysical type experiences, is really being conscious of intent and really filling your heart with the intent of what you intend to get out of an experience. And I don't mean filling it with, you know, I want to make money or those types of issues or I want to avoid evil, but just filling your heart with goodness, filling your heart with love, and filling your heart, in this case, with protection and being conscious of it. So that's the first step. That oftentimes translates itself almost organically to what people have used in the New Thought the New Thought form of consciousness is surrounding yourself with white light.
Mm-hmm.
That's very beneficial in the spirit world. But most important is to really begin to have that dialogue and that energetic communication with others. At that point, you're going to be able to, if you find yourself on this path, there will be people that will appear effectively out of nowhere to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And those people will probably, most often, at least in my experience, it could be different for other people, but they have been usually come into my life to help me through a particular doorway or through a particular gateway where they're going to help me get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of us, when we're looking at somebody to help us and a guru or that type of person, they really want to latch on to them for their entire life and this person's going to teach me everything forever. But, you know, in my case, I was very, I learned a really harsh lesson that not just because somebody can help you from step one to step two doesn't necessarily mean they can help you from step two to step three. So when we're talking about the more advanced metaphysical type of experiences and you're finding yourself, playing with energy and you're actually confronted with these dark forces, it's almost best to keep your heart open to entities or people or souls that can actually guide you through that particular event that you're going to be going through.
And I was telling the experience on the radio just before this about how when I started out some of my own explorations, I had a wonderful, wonderful guide that I absolutely adored and I had him named and everything. And when the time came, he just moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my experience over and over again, whether it's physical or spiritual or non-physical, I guess is a better way to put it, right?
Yeah, so
that people need to hear that. They need to know you don't just grab hold and then hang in there.
Yeah, exactly. And just because somebody is perfect for you in a particular point in time, or you find out that this person is really a charlatan and they're just after your money or whatever, it doesn't mean...
Or they go so far and you know that they're limited now.
Yeah, exactly. All of these different things. You should just trust the fact that you were given that experience at that time. Mm-hmm. And when it's time to move on and it feels like it's just not working anymore, it probably isn't. And that's nothing's wrong with that.
Right.
It doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean anything. It just or it doesn't mean that they're a horrible person. It just simply means that you guys have gotten what you need from each other, and it's time to move on.
Time to move on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything more about the book, or do you want to let people order it and read it themselves?
Well, no. I think that's good. Do you have some other questions you want to talk about?
Well, you know what I wanted to talk about? Daily Om. Are you interested in talking about that? I think that's
a
wonderful website. Yeah.
Yeah,
I get it on a daily basis, and from my perspective, I don't have a lot of extra time, so I kind of go through it quickly. But it's well written astrological daily presentation. I really like it. Do you write that?
No, I don't. Actually, the content of Daily Om is all responsible. My wife is responsible for all of the content on Daily Om. So she handles all of the writing and editing and all that stuff.
So it's a family thing.
it is a family thing. What happened was I had started an internet music website in the mid-90s called iMusic.
Hmm.
And so it was one of the first music websites. And I sold it to a company. We were based in Seattle at the time. I sold it to a company in L.A. We moved to L.A. And at the same time, my wife started an aromatherapy company. So we were really busy living the L.A. lifestyle. I was commuting 45 minutes each way to my job.
Style, all right.
Yeah, that's definitely the style of Los Angeles living. And in the midst of this life, in order to deal with all of this that was going on, we then deepened our earth-based spiritual practice, where we did a lot of meditation, yoga, in our spare time in order to balance ourselves.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Which was definitely good and allowed us to, to not go insane. But then when her business became so popular, I left my job in the music industry. Right after we started working together, we really had the heart-to-heart and decided, you know what, we don't want to just work so hard so we have these few hours at the end of the day where we can balance ourselves with yoga and meditation. What we want to do is to live in consciousness 24 hours a day and really take that energy that was from our spiritual practice and infuse it into our professional lives.
Excellent.
And so what we did is we started Daily Om essentially for ourselves. We're like, okay, well, we're going to do this for ourselves. And so, my background was in the internet and technology. So I did the technology and business side. And then my wife, Madison, began writing these messages of consciousness and awareness and started sending it to our friends. And then they forwarded it to their friends and so on, and now we have a million subscribers.
Wow. Well, it's very rich. It's a lovely, lovely... Well, what I like on the astrological things, it always gives you something to do each day as well as something to perceive about your life, and I found it very accurate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, one of the things we didn't want to do when we were doing the horoscopes is we didn't want it to just be, okay, we predict this is going to happen to you.
Yeah, you're
going to
have a bad day today.
Yeah, you're going to have a bad day. What we really wanted to look at is the fact that every day has an example for a powerful gift that the universe has given us. And so we use the stars to then determine, okay, this is what is going to happen to you based on your astrological sign, and this is how you can take that as a gift and really improve on yourself and ultimately the world by keeping these things in mind.
So when a person signs up for the daily, you put in your own astrological designation, you get a specific for yourself.
Yes, you do.
I like
so
that.
We have actually three different main newsletters that we have. The first is inspirational, and that's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second is the astrology, and that's 12 different editions, one for each sign. And then the third newsletter we have is a music recommendation.
Wow, that's a hefty kind of daily activity for you both, eh?
Yes, absolutely. There's hundreds of thousands of pages on the website, so we've been quite busy.
Well, it's very, I just want people to check into it, because it doesn't matter which way your interest goes. Well, you pretty much have to be into the spirituality, but you'll find a lot there, and there's even a marketplace, so good work.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, do people, who gets to be in the marketplace?
Well, there's different levels of products that we sell. Some of them we choose on a weekly basis, and some are advertisers that we pre-screen and make sure that they're in alignment with the De Leon vision. It's a combination of different ways of choosing them.
You know, it's very elegant. It's very elegantly done, so I really honor you, and I recommend that people check into that as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, and it's very helpful. But I really appreciated this. This has been wonderful chatting with you, and I like the work you're doing in all levels. And the
thank
book
you.
Is a good read. Would make a great
so
movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're talking to a few people. We'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, did you ever see the Peaceful Warrior movie?
Yes, I did.
I thought they did a darn good job on that.
Yes, and actually, I would say one of the nicest comments that I had was from Dan Millman about Waiting for Autumn. He was very nice.
Well, I'm sure he was truthful.
Yeah.
No, I don't know him at all, except I love his work. And this book, I went, yep, this would make a great movie as well. So thank you so much, and congratulations on having a new son.
Oh, yes, thank you very much. Oliver Moon was born 2 weeks ago today.
Oliver Moon?
Yep.
What a great name, eh? Is he writing yet?
No, but he's already has a book. He's already has a book named after him.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. I really recommend people look for Waiting for Autumn, scottbloom.net.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this.
Yes,
learned
thank
a
you.
Lot.
It's been an honor.
Thank you. All right. So this is Veronica Entwistle. That was our paradigm shifter for this week, and you can have ongoing learning from Scott Bloom by looking at his book, Waiting for Autumn, and also checking out De Leon, where he and his wife, Madison, do a beautiful job informing you and touching your heart. He's also got daily inspirations there, but I haven't read those, so you'll have to check those out and let me know. Now, I'll be on at 8 o'clock with Jackie Salvitti and her team of wonderful beings on ET Healing and Exploration and Consciousness, and that will be on at 8 o'clock on BBS on Thursday night. I don't know who my guests are next week. I think we'll go Beyond the Veil again on Radiance by Design at 4 o'clock Tuesday, and I'll be sending out my flyer again to let you know who's going to be my paradigm shifter, and on the 28th it'll be Caroline Corey with her perceptions of the universe and how it goes together. So this is Veronica Entwistle. I still have a minute. My gosh, there's so much happening. Oh, my web address. My web address. Bob is right about that. My web address is, and I wanted to say two things. One is my web address is Veronica, www.veronicaentwistle.com. That's Veronica Entwistle with no H in Entwistle. And if you want a session with me, a healing session, they're pretty transformative. I have a wonderful team of guides, and we do some great energy healing work, as most of you know. And if you'd like a session with me, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. That's Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. And if you email me, you might want to let me know what you think about our interviews and whether there are people that you would like to hear interviewed on Paradigm Shifters. I love your point of view and your feedback. Now, also, our show is running on GlastonburyRadio.com. No, Glastonbury Radio. Yeah, Glastonbury Radio. I think it's. Oh, GlastonburyRadio.co.uk. Okay, so anyway, they're syndicating this radio show, and it's going to be on over in England, and I haven't got any feedback from you people in England yet. But I hope to get that at Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com. Take some love from the universe, call it in, run it through your body, mind, and then send it out through your heart chakra all over the world. Send it out to all kinds of people remember, it generates itself. Take some, pass it on. Take some, pass it on. It just grows fields of love. Talk to you soon. Blessings to all of you, and thank you for listening. Good night.